Friends, and welcome back to yet another episode of What Page Are You On? It's me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It's me, Alice Slater.
I hope that by the time you hear this, you will have also heard a little jingle. If you haven't just heard a little jingle of some description, it's because I gave up. Basically, I have a new laptop. Unfortunately, my old laptop is now dead. That is where the jingle, the intro outro music for this podcast lived in perpetuity. I don't know where I found it. I found it 9 years ago. Don't know what happened. So either we have a new one or we have none at all. So take from that what you will.
Also, we're hoping this is an opportunity for a refresh. Because another books podcast, and I'm not salty, it's royalty free, but another books podcast with a very famous person at the helm is using a very similar royalty-free jingle. So we, you know, we're pioneers. We're going to keep moving forward. We're
going to refresh. 2017 is a long time ago. Maybe it was always time for us to have a new little jingle.
Can you believe it's nearly been 10 years?
We need to do something for our 10th birthday. I don't know what it will be.
Let's make it all about us.
Yeah. That would be so nice.
2027 is the year of What Page Pod.
So true, bestie.
Yeah.
So we are now at the beginning of August. How was July for you reading wise?
Oh, it was dreadful. But I've got
what
a lot
happened to you.
Okay. Well, you know, we're all friends. I've thought a lot about what to say regarding my reading in July. And I figured the best policy is honesty. I've had a terrible little mental health month. I've been in the weeds. And that really impacts my ability to do basically anything. But I realized when I was looking at what books I've actually finished this month, I was shocked at how low the number was because I feel like I've been reading every day. So I'm going to discuss the three books I finished reading, but also the four books I'm currently in the process of reading. And also the two books that I did not complete at all and put aside. Or
Okay.
DNF, as we say in the biz.
I think that's still loads of chat.
Got plenty to discuss. Just, you know, we're doing it differently. I think also I figured, because I was like, I could just talk about the books that I actually finished. But I feel like, or I could have the ones that I'm currently reading, two of them I've nearly finished. And I was like, oh, I could just bump them up and pretend I finished them. And I was like, no, I'm not going to lie to the good people of the pod. What's the point in that?
They deserve better.
Doing what people believe lots of influencers do, which is fake how many books they've read.
We which believe we in do not do.
Radical reading honesty.
We are comfortable with the amount we read.
How about you, bro? What's your figure? Give me the deep.
Same. I hit my eight, which tends, you know, at the moment tends to be my average. Mostly audio, but some eyeballs. All right, reading month. July was a strange month for me. If you follow me elsewhere, you will know that in July I had 1 week of holiday and then, well, meant to be 2 weeks of jury service. I ended up only doing one because I was so good at it. Just kidding. Just by chance. But that, you know, those things, the holiday was quite good for reading, but then jury service was quite bad for reading, although I did read one whole book, so that was nice. So yeah, strange month. Interested to see what August has in store. Would you like to begin?
Yeah, I'll kick us off. So I started strong. My first book of July, I smashed through it. And it was one that I did a little request on Instagram for recommendations. I was looking for books that are preferably written in the 90s. And I was looking for like rock and roll sleaze, nightlife. There was a few that I read last month that kind of fit that bill. I wanted to keep that good vibe going. And loads of people recommended Valencia by Michelle T, which I was delighted by because I already had a copy on my shelf. I bought the Beautiful Serpent's Tale reissue from a few years ago. So if you're not familiar, Valencia is autofiction. It's about Michelle T's time living in San Francisco in the 90s. And it's this really boozy kind of meandering account of all of all that that entails. So like late nights, parties, hookups, but also things like protests and marches, art projects and creative endeavors. And I think for me, that kind of fiction is really difficult to get right because nothing really happens in terms of an overarching narrative, but there is so much happening on every single page. Also, I just adore Michelle Tee. Have you read much Michelle Tee?
I've read, well, there was one that came out like maybe around the time that we started the pod. I feel like that was a real Michelle Tee moment, but I can't remember what it was.
Against memoir.
Yes, I think it was Against Memoir. I liked it.
We interviewed her on the pod. I went to the Barbican and interviewed her about Against Memoir for the pod. So if you're
Yes.
interested in that, you can go and listen. But I will say, I recall that interview was fucking chaos because we were put in a green room that was a very active space. So we were constantly interrupted. I don't know how good the interview is, to be honest, because it was really difficult to actually do. But I had a great time chatting to her. And I love her voice. I love her wisdom. I think she's really funny, but she's also really frank and really vulnerable.
She's an interesting person, I feel. She's a sort of like a Miranda July-esque person where I'm like, I'm just interested in you as a cultural figure.
Yeah, and she's like really fucking prolific. I don't know how I should have checked actually, but I don't know how many books she's written, but it's a lot. It's a big number. And also, I will say for any of my witchy girlies, Modern Tarot is my favorite. It's my favorite book about tarot. I think her kind of insight in the way that she talks about the cards is really interesting and really original. So yeah, I'm a big Michelle Tee fan, and Valencia was exactly what I needed. I absolutely smashed through it, and I really recommend it.
Isn't it nice when you ask the internet for recommendations and they actually give you a recommendation that literally fits the bill and delights you rather than some random shit that doesn't?
It's when people just respond to the brief. Oh God, I love it.
Gorgeous. Well, thinking of, things from back in the day, do you remember what we used to like? We used to like thrillers.
I was gonna say, I was like, you can't ask me that question when we're recording the pod. Like, I will say all sorts of nonsense that we don't want in the public realm.
Well, we used to like thrillers, right?
We did.
And now, we've said many times, it ain't what it used to be. Quality control gone way down. All the plots have been done. Well, most of the plots have been done. Many of the plots have been done. So I read a lot less in the thriller space than I did some time ago. But I'd heard interesting things about a thriller called It's Not What You Think by Claire McIntosh.
Claire McIntosh, she was one of the pioneers of the golden age of the thriller, IMO, with,
Well,
what is it called? I Let You Go?
yes.
Kraken.
Yeah.
Anyway, please continue.
So I'd sort of lost track of her, in the midst of the, thriller boom. But I read her latest one, It's Not What You Think, and it was great. It was basically, okay. I need to find the plot because the blurb that they've got on Waterstones is kind of annoying.
Wishy-washy, the wishy-washy.
Yes. Okay. So it's about a lady called Nadika who has a partner called Jamie. Nadika is certain that Jamie's having an affair. She knows all the telltale signs. She's been here before. When Jamie claims to be at work late, she knows he's lying. He's with another woman and she's determined to catch him in the act. But when Nadika arrives home to confront him, Jamie can't explain himself. The house has become a crime scene. Jamie is dead. Pretty, classic standard fare. But there is such an audacious twist that happens quite early on that is so intriguing that you're like, I must know more. So
I march my little booty straight to a bookshop and buy it.
it's good fun.
Because I think that's what I really miss about the golden era of thrillers, which when we say golden era, we're talking like 2012 to 2016-ish, 2017-ish, something like that. And it was the combination of really well-realized worlds in which the characters are inhabiting, really good writing on a line level, not necessarily purple prose, fancy, like literary, but just really sharp, astute prose and genuinely interesting plots I genuinely care about what happens, and the twists feel smart and well-rounded and make sense. And I feel like it is hard to find books that have all of those points present.
I'm not saying this is like the best thriller I've ever read, but I think it's got enough interesting stuff that I had not necessarily encountered in other similar books that I was like, you know what? If I read only a couple of thrillers this year, I'm not mad that this was one of them.
Oh, yeah.
So I was happy to return to the earlier days of the thriller lifestyle with It's Not What You Think by Claire McIntosh. What was your next read?
My next read was a book called Carrying by Samantha Josephs.
Oh, yes, I recognize this. Yeah, it's got a good cover, right?
Yeah, it's got
Tooth in a sink, bloody tooth in a
yes,
sink.
that's it. I was gonna say chicken, that's the American cover. It's got a really lovely, pretty and pink kind of bathroom setting with a bloody tooth on the sink. So Carrying is about a very perfect housewife. We meet her in a butcher's where she's buying chicken breasts for dinner, but then also beef liver and enough pig's blood to get Carrie feeling a little bit nervous in her little polyester prom dress. And then what follows is this like really kind of bloody transgressive story about a trans woman. So this Martha, this housewife, is trans, but she's living in total stealth. No one in her life, not her husband, none of her friends, no one is aware that she is trans, aside from her doctor, who happens to be a very beloved friend from many, many years ago. And basically, she and her partner have been trying for a baby. So she's been doing a lot of legwork to make this narrative believable. And then she finds herself pregnant. So her husband's over the fucking moon. Her doctor is like, what the fuck is happening? She ends up having to deal with lots of really strange side effects in like a really toe-curling way. So lots of like really gross, strange experimental home remedies and consuming an alarming volume of rotten meat to keep her and her baby healthy. It's really camp and grotesque. It's very compelling. It's very much like The Substance in terms of its vibe. But it's looking at like womanhood and what it is to quote unquote pass. I really enjoyed it. It's really, it's so gross. It's really kind of burlesque in its grossness. And I thought it was interesting as well. Like, I think we're in a moment right now. We've had a moment of cannibalism. We're now in this moment of like grotesque appetite. So I've got a couple of other books on my shelves that sort of fit that bracket, which I've not read yet, caveat, but Milk Red Teeth by Amy Twigg. And also one called A Healthy Appetite by Katie Huddlestone. So if that's your bag and you're interested in appetite as a kind of grotesque or a kind of exaggerated grotesqueness, then you are in for a treat. We're in your era.
Okay, well, I like the sound of this one. Thank you for selling it to me. It
Oh.
sounds like it's got, more going on than just the appetite
It's
element, which I feel I need.
Really interesting. And I will just note that one is not out till next year.
Okay.
I'm reading ahead that I think
Snuck
it's
in.
January next year. So just keep an eye, guys. Just keep an eye.
So my next read, there I was minding my own business on the overground, and I saw someone reading a book with like a really cool looking color cover. It's like this bright orange cover, quite like graphic. It had like a picture of a little black girl sitting on a step and this big like speech bubble coming out of her mouth or coming out, sort of out of her body somehow with the mercy step written on it. And I was like, oh, I've never heard of this book. And then when I looked it up, I could get it on audiobook from Libby. It was shortlisted for the Women's Prize this year. Somehow it had passed me by. It's called The Mercy Step by Marcia Hutchinson. Have you heard of this book?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know if it's necessarily like a book for you, but I really feel like of all the novels I've read so far this year, like this is easily one of my favorites. I loved it. It's basically about, I mean, I don't know if it's autobiographical, but the main character's first name and last name are extremely similar to the author's, like the author and the main character, seem to be pretty analogous. And it's basically set in Bradford in the 1960s. About a little girl who is the daughter of two Jamaican immigrants, and she has a lot of siblings. She has like an abusive father. Her mother is extremely religious. It's just like the story of this girl's childhood, but like the voice of the main character is so fun and engaging. And even though it's not necessarily like the kind of book I would normally like gravitate towards, I was like so drawn into it and I absolutely loved it. It's very like, yeah, lively and engaging. And I found it kind of like interesting to read about like Bradford in the 1960s from the perspective of like a young black girl. It was just great. I loved it.
Sounds good, pal. I feel like it's not necessarily something that would make my head turn until you talked about voice. And for me, I think any narrative, if it's got a really compelling character voice, I'm gonna have a good time.
I thought the voice really was the thing that made me kind of like keep picking it up. And like at times when I could be listening to a podcast, I was like, no, you know what? I really want to listen to this audiobook.
Oh, I love that.
And it was published by Cassava Republic, which I feel like is a small guy. Let me look this up. Leading global publisher of fiction and non-fiction books from Africa and its diaspora for children and adults.
Amazing.
Chic. What was your next read?
So I went rogue. So between Carrying and my next read, I had lots of false starts. I started lots of things that are great, but that I'm still working my way through. And I decided that I really wanted to read something that I knew that I'd read before. I wanted to do a reread that I knew would be an absolute banger, that would be on a line level exquisite. And I picked up Enduring Love by Ian McEwan.
Oh my God, I've read that. I've seen that film, not for a long time, but I remember loving. Yeah, I would really like to reread that.
It is so fucking good, man.
Yeah.
Anyone who's unfamiliar with Enduring Love, it's about a man and his, I believe, wife. They're having a picnic when they hear a scream, and they follow the sound to find a ballooning accident in process. It's a hot air balloon. There's a little boy in the basket. The driver of the balloon, would it be driver pilot is the word we'd use. The pilot is struggling to get the balloon under control with because they're kind of in this wind tunnel. And at any minute there's going to be a big gust and the balloon is going to fuck off into the sky with this kid inside. So the man, his name is Joe. Joe and three strangers, or four other strangers, all run to help this dude. And in the process, they almost get control of it. They lose control and the result is a tragedy. But what happens is, in that kind of fateful meeting, Joe meets another man who becomes obsessed with him. Even that, I feel like that first chapter is one of the most gripping chapters in all of literature, in my opinion. I'm going to go
Agree.
bold on
Yeah, no,
that.
I agree. Because
It
even if
is.
you don't remember anything else about the book or the film, you remember like the red balloon and to me the balloon is red. That's all I remember.
And can I tell you my crazy fact?
Tell
That
me.
was not the original opening chapter.
Oh my God.
The original opening chapter of the novel was the restaurant scene. No spoilers, but
Yeah.
the I've done it. I've done a finger
Yeah.
act. Yeah, that was the original opening chapter. Apparently,
Mm.
they decided. Ian McEwan decided to. He wanted something bigger and, I guess, more unusual in the world of fiction.
Yeah.
But yeah, I absolutely love this book so much. I mean, also thematically, it's about things like faith. It's about art versus science. It's about male loneliness in a strange sort of way. It's just so gripping. It's so good. I had such a good time with it, and it really served my needs.
And from what I remember, it's short, isn't it?
It's pretty short. Yeah, I
Yeah.
pounded through it. I think the only thing I will say is that there is a lot of like science brain jazz in there, which I found really interesting. Maybe other readers may find that stuff a bit more of a slog if it's really not your bag, if you're very resistant to that kind of narrative. But I'm not, and I loved it. Have you read much Ian McEwan?
I've read that. I've definitely read at least like one or two others, but
You must have read Atonement.
I've read Atonement.
With
He
Kate
did a
Marden?
children's book when I was a child that I read. I can't remember what else I've read by him. Maybe I need to delve more deeply.
Well, I recommend The Cement Garden if you're comfortable with feeling really uncomfortable.
That I have read that. Yeah, that's the one I've read.
I thought I
I was going to say the Cement Garden, but I was like, did he write that? I couldn't remember. Yeah, I've read the Cement Garden.
And also his short fiction is just incredible. It's so dark, it's so bleak. I also read doing my research for this pod, I discovered that he got given the nickname Ian Macabre. Did I just pronounce that word wrong?
Yeah, no, that's how I pronounce it.
Know, sometimes when you say something out loud and you're like, I feel like I missed a note there. Anyway, I love that. And I was like, no wonder I love this bitch.
Yeah.
Though I have to say, I haven't read a word by him since Amsterdam.
Yeah, I feel like I'd need someone to really sell the newer stuff to me in order for me to feel motivated to read it. Well, speaking of big boys of British literature, the
Hit me.
next book I read, and I think you would love this, is called Every Day is Mother's Day by Hilary Mantel. So, I loved it. It is about a, well, I'll tell you. Barricaded inside their house, filled with festering rubbish, unhealthy smells, and their secrets, the Axon family baffle Isabel Field, the latest in a long line of social workers. Isabel has other problems too. A randy, untrustworthy father and a slackly romantic lover, Colin Sidney, history teacher to unresponsive yobs and father of a parcel of horrible children. With all this to worry about, how can Isabel begin to understand what is going on in the Axon household? So,
Okay,
what?
wait, so to interrupt, I immediately have two things that I have to say immediately. First of all, whoever just tossed in the word randy into
Yes.
the blurb, fantastic work. Fantastic work. You don't hear the word randy very
You
often.
don't. I had not, this is on the HarperCollins website, and I hadn't read it before I read it out. And as soon as I got to that word, I was like, great, 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 great.
Like she's gonna kick off. She's gonna
Yeah.
absolutely.
She's got something to say.
My other thing was, can you reread that line about the home, the festering rubbish?
Barricaded inside their house, filled with festering rubbish, unhealthy smells, and their secrets.
That is me all July. That's my month.
Secrets, festering rubbish, and unhealthy smells. So yeah, basically the two women that live in this house are a horrible, like late middle-aged woman and her daughter who has an intellectual disability of some kind, not specified. But the woman is a now sort of mostly retired psychic medium who believes that the house is like completely infested with ghosts. And those are the people that live in this house. They are having interactions with social services. They have the social worker. And so it's sort of about like this constellation of people around this situation. And it's really dark. It's really sort of funny. It's like very, it felt very like Caroline Blackwood in sort of like horrible darkness. And when I went to put it into, so I had such a good time. Like I absolutely loved this. And when I went to put it into Storygraph, it said Axon Family Number One, like as if it's part of a series. And I was not aware of that. So now I've just, when I was on the HarperCollins website, yeah, apparently it's part of a three-part series. The next one's called Vacant Possession, which is also about the same family. I don't know whether there is like another one. Maybe I incorrectly assume there was three. But basically, I think you would really like Every Day is Mother's Day. It's very dark, it's very horrible,
When
and
you
it's
said it
really
was
fun.
like Caroline Blackwood energy, which she's one of my favorite kind of rediscovered authors of late. Also, I've never read any Hilary Mantel, and everyone told me when I was writing like the Bad Times Roll that I should read Beyond Black, which I never got around to doing.
Well, you
Also,
know, I think you should read Beyond Black. You know, I think that. You know,
I
it's
just
one of my favorite books of all time. I love it.
I know. In fact, we're gonna come back to we're gonna pick this up, this thread up later. Recommendations that one resists through
But I
no.
would say of Beyond Black and Every Day is Mother's Day, I actually think as a book, you would probably, Every Day is Mother's Day is more close to other books that you like, even though I think Beyond Black is in itself like a much more complex, interesting book. I feel like if you want the Caroline Blackwood-esque hit, then this is the one for you. So that's like a major rec for the listeners of the pod, is this horrible little Hilary Mantel book. What was your next read, my dude?
So my next read, this is one I have like 20 pages left and I plan to finish it this morning. But you guys tired, I decided instead to sleep and then write my notes for this episode instead of finishing it. But I'm nearly done. It's called Don't You Miss It by Julia Pike.
Oh yes, I saw you reading that, and I meant to, because I've been sent a copy of that, and I saw you had it in the pub the other day, and I wanted to be like, how's the book?
I'm glad you didn't ask then because I'm going to tell you now. I'm
Great.
having a wonderful time with it. So the premise is, it feels that as I describe this premise, it may feel like familiar territory, but this book does have a very special kind of element to it. So it's about four university gals. It's they're graduating. It's their final summer of fun, and on a big night out, one of them dies. First of all, one thing that I absolutely loved, when I get sent a book, I knew what the vibe was. I don't bother rereading the blurb. I don't bother reading around the book before I read it. I just go in. So your experience may vary if you read the blurb or read around the book, but one of the girls dies that night and you don't know who it is. I went in reading it, not knowing who was going to pass away. And immediately that had the whole chapter had such a kind of sense of dread. At every point, as they kind of diverge and they do their own thing and then they come back together and they separate again, there was such an intense sense of vulnerability as they're all drinking, they're intermingling with strangers, they're by the seaside, so they're like, paddling in the water, and there was just such a sense of dread throughout the whole thing that I was like, wow, this is hitting the right note for me. What then? The rest of the narrative is the remaining three girls. Kind of moving on into the adult world. And, one goes to New York, the other goes to San Francisco, the other goes to like a remote island on a retreat thing. But they're all completely haunted by the trauma of their grief. And one of them basically hacks into the dead girl's phone and reads her notes app. And so the narrative is intermingled with notes from this young woman's life. In reverse order, as they would appear if you were scrolling through a notes app. So they start with things like, packing lists for their weekend away, random scraps of poetry, ideas for like comedy shows, like all the kind of normal stuff that would appear. But then she also, in her notes app, will write out important text messages. She'll practice them before she sends them, or like draft emails that she doesn't send. And like through this notes app, some unexpected turns appear. I'm absolutely loving it. I think it has a very youthful energy. The writing itself is very self-assured. It's the kind of book, however, that I really hope that the kind of 20-something Bookstagram crowd, I really hope they find it, because I mean, loving it now as a 40-year-old, but I know I would have gone so fucking at 25.
It's got sort of, do you remember that book we really liked, Marlena by Julie Bunting?
Exactly, yeah.
That was very, I feel like we're really thinking back to like our early days of the pod. That was very like 10
Oh,
years ago, all of that. But it sounds so good.
it's really, this is something I'm actually finding hard, and maybe this is a good opportunity to discuss it. It is, I find, difficult to talk about reading as a 40-year-old. That's, me saying that this book has this youthful energy is not a derogatory comment on the book itself at all. It's sometimes I find it really difficult to describe who I think the ideal reader is without sounding as though I'm being patronizing or implying that the book is somehow falling short, but it's a very strange experience, I guess, like having been doing this for 10 years, and talking about books for so much longer, because obviously I'm a bookseller. In fact, that's crazy, isn't it? We started the pod the year I stopped bookselling. Anyway, yeah, it's just an interesting shift that I'm noticing now that my taste, obviously our taste is always in perpetual motion, but that is an element now that I haven't felt before, that there are some books that I read, I think they're incredible, but I know they're not quite for me in terms of age. There is a youthfulness, or like the concerns of the novel are no longer quite aligned with my concerns where I am now in my life.
Well, I was also sent a copy and I'm very interested to read it. It sounds very good and I'm glad that you are enjoying it because I feel like that bodes well for me,
I
the
hope they
protagonist of the
pop
universe.
both this and Carrying. I hope they pop off really hard. That's what I'm gonna say. And in fact, they're both Fourth Estate. Fun
Chic.
fact for you. Yeah. Okay. What's next for you?
So next for me is classic Bethany Fair in the form of a non-fic about something that I was like vaguely interested in.
Is
But
this the first non-fic of the pod
this
so
is,
far?
I think, my first non-fic of the pod, and then the next three are non-fic. So
Perfect.
this and two more are my non-fics of the month. Yeah, I've had more of a ficky month this month. So I have been quite interested this year in learning about, are you familiar with the siege at Waco? Okay. So basically, in the 1990s, there were two separate incidents that happened within very quick succession of each other, in America, which involved like the government and government agencies having very violent siege slash confrontations with people that, we may not necessarily sympathize with. So whether we're talking like weird cults or like implied like white supremacist, blah blah blah. So Waco was one that was a cult vibe one where lots and lots of people died. Another was Ruby Ridge. And so I'd hear the words Ruby Ridge, I'd hear it as like an example of kind of like the beginning of mistrust of the government. And when the Oklahoma City bombing happened, the dude that did the Oklahoma City bombing cited it as like revenge for Waco and Ruby Ridge. So it's like a real formative moment in like the radicalized right-wing violent American anti-government mindset that we are seeing a lot now. So I feel like these two things are quite like useful to know about in the context of like the world we are currently living in. So anyway, our friend of the pod, Gorgeous Elizabeth from Daunce in Summertown in Oxford, mentioned to me that they were reissuing a book about Ruby Ridge, I think this year. And by chance, I was able to like get it on audiobook, and I listened to it, and I had such a great time. So updated with new content. Number one New York Times bestselling author Jess Walter's classic work that chronicles the 1992 confrontation at Ruby Ridge between Randy Weaver and federal law enforcement, a tragic 11-day siege that became a symbol of government overreach and fueled the rise of America's radical right. On the last hot day of summer in 1992, gunfire cracked over a rocky knob in northern Idaho, just south of the Canadian border. By the next day, three people were dead and a small war was joined, pitting the full might of federal law enforcement against one well-armed family. Drawing on thousands of pages of documents and extensive interviews with a member of Randy Weaver's family, government insiders, and others, Jess Walter traces the paths that led the Weavers to their confrontation with federal agents and led the government to take extreme and unprecedented measures. But as the past 30 years have shown, the standoff at Ruby Ridge would not be an isolated incident. This is the story of what happened there, the tragic and unlikely series of events that destroyed a family, ended FBI careers, and left a nation increasingly attuned to the dangers of unchecked federal power. It's also the story of racism, religious zealotry, paranoia, fierce hatred of government, and violence that has become increasingly visible across American society. So to me, it was very interesting. It's not like I feel like I've been reading a lot of these books, like the Jon Krakauers, the David Grahams. I would not say that Jess Walter, who is a man, I did not know this, Jess Walter is a man. I would not say that he is as accomplished a writer. It's very journalistic, in a way that I feel like David Gran especially is good at not writing journalistically. He's got like such a great engaging style. I got like a lot of interesting information about Ruby Ridge from this book. I completely agree it should be reissued now. I feel like it tells us a lot about the world we are living in. It's an interesting, if you're already interested in the source, in the subject, it is really worth reading. I wouldn't say it's like the most magnificent work of nonfiction I've ever read. That's Ruby Ridge. What was your next read, my queen?
I was gonna say, sometimes the thing with nonfiction is you describe it and I'm like, excellent. I have no, nothing more to add. I have no response.
No takes.
Yeah, no takes. Moving on.
Yep.
So my next book, so this is one I'm also currently reading via a different format. I'm reading this on my telephone. I'm a big fan of the Kindle app on the telephone.
Me too.
I know some people think it's unfathomable to read on their phone.
I
You
just
really
don't have a Kindle anymore. Like, I don't have a, I gave my Kindle to my gran when my gran's Kindle broke. So now I have no Kindle.
I fully have a Kindle, but I'm scrolling on my phone all the time anyway. I think reading on my phone is second nature. So I have no beef with reading a book on there either.
Agree.
But I'm reading a book called Girl on Girl by Sophie Gilbert.
I've heard of this.
And this one is, I'm just going to pull up what the actual tagline is. It's about women in pop culture, basically. The tagline is How Pop Culture Turned a Generation of Women Against Themselves. I picked this up as research. For a novel that I'm kind of working on at the minute. And it's basically a kind of a critique of how the early noughties pop culture became really toxic for women.
And
And
like
I just
internalized misogyny and yeah.
actually, yeah. And I just want to read this quote that I think really exemplifies what I'm here for in this narrative. So the preceding paragraph was talking about the rise of kind of arty pop women in the 90s. So I'm talking about PJ Harvey, Björk, Tori Amos, you know, that kind of energy. And a lot of them obviously were singing about misogyny, womanhood, like female rage, that kind of thing. And then the next paragraph. But the more women vocalized their objections, the more male artists seethed in response. The nodded out angst of grunge soon gave way to the toxic masculine wasteland of nu metal. Songs such as Korn's 1996 Cunts, spelled with a K, and then we do a bracket quote and then a line from the song Cunts by Korn. Fuck you, titty sucking two bald bitch with a fat green clit, my big Korn hoto bitch. Oh shit, fucking ass licking piss sucking cunt.
Great.
Fantastic. Now, I'm going to say I'm a big Korn fan. I don't know this song. But then the next one that she's pulled out as an example of like what exemplifies the toxic masculine wasteland of nu metal is Limp Bizkit's 1997 song Sour. And the quote is just, mellow out, bitch, which I found really funny. So yeah, I'm having a lovely time. I think it's really interesting. I'm reading a chapter every so often. I think I'm only about 25% of the way through. So I guess we'll check in on my progress next month. But for me, nonfiction, some nonfiction I will read. If it feels more narrative based, then I will read it as I would a novel. For things like this, which are more like essays, you know, I'm not gonna smash through that in one go. I will read one whole essay in completion, then I'll take a break and carry on reading something else. So that's where I am with that.
It sounds very useful to the book that you are interested in writing.
I love like we're using this language because I'm not sure where I'm at with it. We're doing very, you know, we're talking carefully about it, like we don't want to scare it away.
We're being gentle.
Yeah. What was next for you, my
My
friend?
next read was another nonfic, and it's a nonfic that had been on my radar for some years and had never got around to reading. Even though friend of the pod, John Cudby, had given me his copy ages ago, I just had not got around to it, which was Thunderclap by Laura Cumming. It's an art history one, right up my street. It's basically the Goldfinch, the painting, the
I am,
Goldfinch.
yeah.
Yeah, so the painting The Goldfinch was painted by an artist, a Dutch artist called Fabricius, who was killed in a crazy gunpowder explosion. On the morning of the 12th of October, 1654, a gunpowder explosion devastated the Dutch city of Delft. Among the fatalities was the painter Karel Fabricius, dead at 32, leaving behind his haunting masterpiece, The Goldfinch. Thunderclap, this book, explores what happened to Fabricius before and after the disaster, whilst interweaving the lives of Laura Cumming, her painter father, and the great artist of the Dutch Golden Age. I r liked it. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I've read it. I didn't find it quite as like transformative. I really expected it to like change my life, and it didn't. But that is, that's on me. I like a book about art history. I like a book about paintings. I enjoyed it. I'm glad I finally got round to it. I don't know why it didn't like quite capture me the way I thought it would, but I'm really glad I've read it, and I hope that one day I will see that little Goldfinch IRL.
My emotional response to this, it just reminds me how much I love The Goldfinch by Donna Tartt.
Exactly. I was thinking, you know what? Maybe I'll revisit The Goldfinch.
I cannot wait for the point in my life when I'm ready to reread The Goldfinch.
Maybe we should do a buddy read.
Oh, shall we?
Maybe. Maybe that
Maybe.
can be our what year did The Goldfinch come out?
I want to say 2014,
Fine.
2030, 2013.
Okay. Well, we'll think about it. We'll figure something out. What was your next read?
Well, this is one that I know you have lots of positive feelings towards. I have never read it in its entirety, and I'm doing it via audio.
Love it already. Don't even know what it is, and I love it.
The Talented Mr. Ripley by Patricia Highsmith.
I like it's so improbable that you haven't read it that I mentally cannot retain the fact that you have not read it. Are we enjoying? Are we having a nice time?
Having a lovely time. It is obviously wonderful. I'm a big fan of the film. I've seen the film three or four times. I absolutely love it.
Film slaps.
Yeah, like
Nothing else to say about it.
literally the perfect cast of any movie ever. Also, coincidentally, would have been the ideal cast for The Secret History had it been
100%.
adapted in the 90s. 90s? Yeah, it's late 90s, isn't it?
Yep.
Having a great time. The problem is, I don't rub along well with listening to books via audio, listening to fiction via audio that I have not already read in its physical. I don't know why, it's just how my brain is wired. I do struggle to remain focused and listen. So I feel like going via audio is maybe not the best choice for me with this one, and I may pivot to the physical book. But yeah, I don't know why I've never read it. It's just one of those things I've actually taken on holiday with me probably three times. And I've never quite managed to get past the first chapter. I'm so fucking fickle. And as we will come to some of the books that I have DNF'd this month so far, but I'm very fickle. And I have to be really gripped by something, otherwise I simply don't pick it up. Or I do something dreadful, which is I pick it up and my eyes read the words and
The
my brain
brain.
is
Yeah.
just doing jazz.
Yeah.
And for some reason, The Talented Mr. Ripley is a book that my brain has never managed to latch onto. I don't know why. It's so well written. It's so gripping. I know what happens in it, so I know it's my ideal read. And I love Patricia Highsmith. Like,
But do you think it's maybe because you know the plot that your brain isn't like, I wonder what's going to happen? You're like, I don't have that curiosity for the plot that's motivating you to read. I don't know.
there's yeah, the kind of hooks of intrigue are not gripping me because.
You've seen the film.
But I don't normally experience that. I think it's just that I've taken against it. I think my brain's gone, no,
Nah, not doing it.
this isn't for you, you stupid bitch. It'd
Yes, maybe.
be that. But anyway, but I will persevere. I promise. By the next episode, I will have completed this challenge. I will
Bold
have read
claim.
Mr. Ripley. Okay, I promise by the end of the year, I will have read this fucking book. I swear to God.
Well, I hope you enjoy it when you do.
Yes.
So my next read was, as I just referenced, I like Jon Krakauer. And this year I read his book, Into Thin Air, which is an account of the disaster that happened on Everest in, I think, May 1995, where lots of people died in one specific sort of incident. Because I knew that I was going on a holiday that would involve me not having internet access for quite a lot of it. And then I knew that I was going into jury service and I didn't know whether I anticipated there being a lot of sitting around and waiting for something to happen. I wanted to be well stocked with audiobooks that I could access offline. And I don't currently have an Audible subscription, so I'm a Libby girlina. So, as I've said before, I often just go on Libby, sort by things that are available now, popularity. Sometimes I will filter by nonfiction, sometimes I won't. But in my travels through the Libby availability of Lewisham libraries on audiobook available now, I came across a book called Everest Inc., The Renegades and Rogues Who Built an Industry at the Top of the World by Will Cockerell, which is quite a new book. I think it came out in 2025. I'd never heard of it, but I was like, you know what? If I just treat it like a podcast, listen to this book, that will probably engage me at times when I might otherwise be very bored. So, featuring original interviews with Everest mountain guides and climbers, this is a fast-moving, nuanced account of the peak's transformation from the ultimate mountaineering challenge into a booming business opportunity. Anyone who has read Jon Krakauer's Into Thin Air or has seen a recent photo of climbers standing in line to get to the top of Everest may think they have a sense of what the world's highest mountain is like. It's an extreme landscape where bad weather and incredible altitude can kill, an overcrowded, trashed-out recreation destination, and a place where the rich exploit local Sherpas while padding their egos and social media feeds. There's some truth to these cliches, but they're a sliver of the story. Basically, this book is about what it sounds like, which is the sort of industrialization, commercialization of climbing Everest, for better or for worse, like what that has meant for the local ecosystem, what that has meant for Sherpas, what that has meant for your average person, how Everest has gone from a thing that was impossible to climb to, only professional mountaineers climbing it to random members of the public climbing it. And I think it's a really, if anyone listening to this has read Into Thin Air and enjoyed it, I think this works as a really interesting companion piece to that book. So I really recommend this if you are already kind of interested in the concept of Everest, even if you think it's a place that no one should ever go, which personally I do.
I've never been more confident in the fact that I would just die.
Yeah, we would. We literally would.
I'd die in the airport.
But
You know what I mean?
even just being on the mountain, it is trying to kill you because of the lack of oxygen. Like the altitude and the lack of oxygen, your brain is dying, and we don't need that. We are dumb enough as it is.
I can't spare the brain
We
cells.
literally can't spare the brain cells. There's some things that in my life I've been like, I will literally never do that. I would say historically, I'd be like, I'm never going to run a marathon. I'm still probably not going to, but there is a world in which I might.
Now that wouldn't be crazy.
It wouldn't be crazy, but I do still think that climbing Everest would be crazy. Like, even if physically I could do it, I just feel like the ways in which you can die, I don't want to do it. I'm not doing it.
If I messaged the group chat being like, guys, guess what I'm doing this summer? Guess what I'm going to do this summer? I really hope that you would all make a few calls. I hope you call my mother. I hope you call 111.
Yeah. No, I'm calling 999. 111 is for non-emergencies. This would be an emergency.
Like she's not well,
Yeah.
and we need
She needs to be looked after right
an
now. Yeah. Right now.
intervention.
So yeah, I really recommend Everest Inc. by Will Cockrell. What was your next read?
So this is another one that I'm currently reading, but this is non-fic in physical form. So just to summarize, I'm currently reading fiction in physical in a fizzy cop, non-fiction on the Kindle, fiction via audio, and non-fiction in fizzy cop. And this is You Had to Be There by Jodie Harsh. So this is, as it says on the back, a romp of a memoir through noughties London. So it's basically like a memoir about like the pre-mobile phone era of clubbing, in a really queer like London landscape. It's messy, it's fun. There are really dark moments. I'm very interested in nightlife. That's one of the things that
Yeah.
I'm interested in writing about. It's one of the things I enjoy partaking in. And like Jodie Harsh was clubbing in the same time period as my peak clubbing days, but in a completely different scene. So I'm really enjoying it. And there's lots of familiar locales like the Astoria, may she rest in peace. Yeah, it's fucking great. And I think Jodie Harsh is awesome. So yeah, I will report back when I've actually finished it. But I wanted to give it a little.
Yeah, this sounds so good.
Oh, hat tip.
Because, I feel like it's so boring to be like, life was so much better when we personally were young people. But unfortunately, when it comes to going out, I fear that that is true. I fear that we are right, that the young people are cooked.
I'm sorry, but I feel like the absolute joy, the freedom of existing without fear of being recorded, like I cannot fathom, like that having so much restraint on oneself because of the fear of photographs or even worse, video, not just circulating, but becoming viral. When you're doing normal, naughty things, normal, naughty club-based things, I feel very grateful to have had that opportunity to be so fucking messy and fun and like live my life without fear of such repercussions. And I really hope that this moment we're in right now, as you know, meta glasses, the sex offender glasses are becoming potentially
Normalized.
ubiquitous. Yeah, that's fucking terrifying to me. I don't think that we should be living in fear of repercussions of things that actually don't really matter. I think it's nice to be silly. I think it's fun to live life colorfully and vibrantly. And yeah, you're so right. It's so boring to be like back in my day. And you know, it really is like talking about like lack of mobile phones in that specific sense, the social media enabled recording device sense. Like it is very much our generation's like, and we used to walk, you know, 10 miles through the snow to school kind of thing. Very much so, but it's fucking true.
Alas, yes.
It wasn't a hardship we endured, it was a joy.
I hear you, Queen. No, it sounds really good. I'm intrigued.
Sorry to interrupt, but apparently the audiobook is read by Jodie Harsh herself. So,
Oh, that sounds like it would be a good one.
as an audio queen.
I may get involved. So, my next read, another person I've read several books by, as has been observed by you this year, is Helen Garner.
You love that bitch.
I'm really getting into this bitch, but because we had talked about her on the pod, when I went to my parents' house recently, my dad was like, "Oh, I have this Helen Garner book. Like, do you want it?" And he gave me a copy of The Spare Room, which I know is one of her kind of like most well-regarded books. Now, I will say, what I've mostly enjoyed by Helen Garner has been the non-fic. So I really enjoyed the Mushroom Tapes and the non-fiction about the horrible murder case of the man accused of killing his children. The one book I didn't like as much was the novel. And so I was approaching The Spare Room as like, could go either way. Now, so here is the blurb. When Helen offers her spare room to her old friend Nicola, she has little idea of what lies ahead. Nicola has cancer and, skeptical of the medical establishment, is in the city for a course of alternative treatment. She's determined to deal with her illness in her own way, regardless of the advice that Helen can offer. In the weeks that follow, Nicola's fight against cancer will turn not only her own life upside down, but the lives of everyone around her. Told with humor and honesty, this unforgettable novel charts a friendship as it is tested in the face of death. So, obviously, kind of, similar to what I said about The Mercy Step, like the main character of this book is Helen Garner, but it is referred to as a novel. So I don't know, I don't know what it is, but I loved it. I read it so fast. I read it all within like 2 days on jury service, and I wasn't even like a sitting around kind of jury service. I was like on trial from day one. I loved this book. Yeah, basically about like her kind of trying to look after, but also like privately at war with a very sort of flamboyant and gregarious friend who is dying of cancer, but thinks that she can cure it by going to all of these like charlatan quack doctors. It's so good. And yeah, I really loved it. I would strongly recommend, if you want like a really pacey, engaging read about someone dying of cancer.
I think I need to get on the Helen Garner train.
I think you read The Spare Room, see if you like it. It's 208 pages long, and there isn't that much. Like at least the edition I had, yeah, I just raced through it really quickly, and I feel like maybe try the one of the murdery ones. Try The Spare
Oh,
Room, and you'll
I have
know.
something. I have one on my shelf. I don't know what it is, but I remember I think I came across something on Instagram. Someone had just like posted one page of it, and I was like, this looks fucking great, and bought a secondhand copy and then never read it. So
I
I
feel
have
like
one.
she's a big deal for a reason. Like I sort of take her seriously. And I've really enjoyed getting to know her this year.
I feel like as you said that, you lost faith in how uncreepy it might sound.
Yes, me and my close friend Helen Garner. What was your next read?
Okay, so I'm gonna do two in one, and it's my final contribution to this month's episode. I wanted to talk about DNFing, did not finishing, not
Hit me.
finishing books. I wouldn't normally talk about such things because 99% of the books that I pick up and don't finish are proofs, often from debuts or authors that I've read before and enjoyed, and the second one just hasn't hit. So I feel no need to share with the world I read 10 pages of this and thought it was garbage. No point. Not interested in doing that. However, I'm a big believer in putting a book down if it's the right book but the wrong time. Especially as I'm the kind of reader that if I'm reading something and I'm not enjoying it, I will simply stop picking the book up. Or I will find myself reading it, but my brain is elsewhere entirely. So I'm very quick to put stuff down if I know that it's good. If I know that it's good on a line level, if I know that it's something that in theory I will enjoy, but at the minute it's not holding my attention, I'd rather preserve that first read experience for a moment where I'm in the right headspace for it. So there are two books that I picked up this month. I read 10 pages of one and like 50 pages of another and was like, this is not the time for this book. The first was Notice by Heather Lewis. Are you familiar with this one?
Not at all.
Another one that came up a lot during when I asked the internet to recommend stuff about, nightlife, 90s, messy lives, that kind of thing. And like a dumb slut, I marched to Foyles, I picked up a copy, I got home. I do something quite strange where I keep track of every book I buy. I have a list. I've been keeping it for like 3 years. I mark them off as I read them or as I DNF them or whatever. And it's just a helpful way to remind myself what I've actually got that I've not read yet, aside from just because I have a huge library, things get lost in it. And yeah, like a dumb slut, I added it to my list and then scrolled through the rest of the list. I'd fucking bought it like 3 years ago and never
You
read it.
idiot.
That's the first time I've ever done that, in my defense. No, it's not. It's the second time. But the other time it was a Poppy Seed Bright book that had a different title. So it's a different, it's published with a different title in the US. So it doesn't count. This was just fully the same copy. Anyway, I started reading it and I realized it actually just sat way too close to Valencia. It was reissued by Serpent's Tale in the same series, so that makes total sense. Obviously, it was recommended to me alongside Valencia. All makes sense. But I felt like I didn't want to read something that would then, in my mind, potentially be blurred with another novel. So I started it, put it down. I will come back to you, Heather Lewis. I'm looking forward to it. The other one I picked up and then put down was White Oleander by Jeanette Fitch.
Oh yes, I would really like to read that. Is it Emily
Janet,
Hattar that
yeah.
liked it?
Janet Fitch, sorry. Yes. Our good friend, stained glass artist, Emily Hatzar, has been recommending this fucking book to me. We checked WhatsApp at least since like 2019. At least. She lent it to me at least 7 years ago and mentions it, I'd say, at least once a year. When I'm like, I don't know what to read next. She's like, White Oleander, White Oleander, White Oleander. Everyone I know who's read it loves it. Apparently, there's a movie that people like as well. And I finally thought the spirit had moved me and it was time. This is another book as well I've taken on holiday with me like 3 times. I started reading it and it just wasn't holding my attention.
It.
And there's so much in it that I love. It's about a young woman who lives with like a very kind of like vibrant, larger than life mother. And the mother is quite the character. And she ends up doing some pretty erratic things that land her in jail. So then you have this young woman like going through the foster system, trying to make sense of life without her mother by her side. There's so much in it that I loved. I was sending Emily like photos of the page, like, oh my God, look, they're reading tarot. Oh my God, they're doing that. Like, there was so much of it that felt great, that felt right. However, I wasn't picking it up. And I think it took me like 2 weeks to read 50 pages. And I was like, I can't be reading at this pace. This is the wrong book. I need to take this book away with me. I need to sit in it properly. And I need to give it the attention it deserves. So I put it aside.
Very mature of you.
I know. I hope that feels like an anecdote worth hearing.
No,
But
yeah, I feel like I also want to read this book. You know that you want to read this book, but like, yeah, you're in a slight psychological flop era right now.
that's it, man. I'm in my flop era
Your
mentally.
fortunate truth is that we're in a psychological flop era. And so you don't want to squander a good book on a moment where you're probably not going to remember any of it.
Also, especially obviously for me, reading and writing come hand in hand. They're so closely intertwined. And I really need to be in a writing era right now. And I'm struggling a bit. I've had a lot of life shit going on. So I can't bear to read anything that I don't feel is directly pushing and inspiring me to write as well. I need to be reading stuff that is really nourishing that part of my brain and like keeping that part of my brain alive. And I feel like in a different headspace, White Oleander would absolutely be that bitch. I don't know why I wasn't connecting with it this month, but Gotta be honest, gotta be truthful. So I hope you can all look forward to one day. I will log on to this, my laptop. I will log into Zoom. I will greet my good friend, business partner, Bethany Rutter, and I will announce that I have finally caught my white whale, if you
I look
will.
forward to it. And
White.
maybe I'll have read it by then too.
Hell yeah. And imagine we're both like, yeah, just nah.
It was all right.
We did it.
So, my final read of the month is by a little up and coming Irish lady author. I don't know if you've heard of her.
Not only have I heard of her, you did this exact bit like 2 days ago. You did this exact bit to me.
Look, I squandered it in the pub. I'm doing it again on the pod. Sally Rooney. I think that's how you,
Who?
yeah, I think that's how you pronounce it, Sally Rooney. So I feel like you were in a similar position to me. We're pro Sally Rooney in this house.
Oh, yes.
We loved Conversations with Friends. We were actually, I'm going to say it, we were early adopters of Conversations with Friends. We were sent proofs of Conversations with Friends. We read it, we loved it, we hyped it. We love Normal People.
Again, sent a proof, read it, loved it, hyped it.
So true, bestie. I can't remember how you felt. I personally did not like Beautiful World, Where Are You?
I did not read Beautiful World, Where Are You? I started it, and the very first page was like, we're back in the Rooney game. Hell yeah. And there was a lot of emails,
Yeah, there
bro.
was
I don't know.
emails. Look, I so we're in a similar position. So strongly pro Sally, and also I will say I will never hear a word against her as a person. I don't care what you think of her book. She is a fucking queen. She is a socialist icon. She is a friend of Palestine. She is the best person in the world. I love her. I have very, very strong positive feelings for her. She could write the most dog shit book, and I would still think she was the best person ever invented. Personally, I did not like Beautiful World, Where Are You? And then Intermezzo comes out, and not gonna lie, sounds boring.
Chess, boo.
Ooh. So the short blurb is two brothers navigate the turmoil and joy of love after the passing of their father in this breathtaking novel from the hugely acclaimed author of Normal People and Conversations with Friends. I don't give a shit. I don't want to read that. That sounds boring.
Chess, yuck.
They don't even talk about chess in
Brothers,
that. Yeah, brothers suck. They're so
yuck.
boring. Two of them, a book about two brothers.
Too many brothers.
Yes. So I don't know what led me now, like literal years after the book came out, to be reading it. I think maybe, I mean, I'm listening to it on audiobook via Libby, and I will say, if I was not listening to it on audiobook, I don't know if I would be as locked in. The dude who reads the audiobook is so fucking good. Like, the audiobook is great. It's a great audio experience. So here is the actual plot. Aside from the fact that they are brothers, Peter and Ivan Kubek seem to have little in common. Peter is a Dublin lawyer in his 30s, successful, competent, and apparently unassailable. But in the wake of their father's death, he's medicating himself to sleep and struggling to manage his relationships with two very different women, his enduring first love, Sylvia, and Naomi, a college student for whom life is one long joke. Ivan is a 22-year-old competitive chess player. He has always seen himself as socially awkward, a loner, the antithesis of his glib elder brother. Now, in the early weeks of his bereavement, Ivan meets Margaret, an older woman emerging from her own turbulent past, and their lives become rapidly and intensely intertwined. It's just like a really kind of like, it's much closer to Conversations with Friends in that it's about kind of like romantic entanglements and like the sort of social implications of romantic entanglements and the way that like things like money and housing and age and like sort of social factors impact like interpersonal relationships. And the fact that it's kind of about two brothers is sort of irrelevant. And I am having so much of a juicier, better time than I thought I would. I'm absolutely loving it. I do not take back what I said about Beautiful World, Where Are You? I still don't like it. But I was wrong about Intermezzo looking and being boring. It's really engaging. It's really like she just writes that kind of like inner world, interpersonal, like tension. people saying one thing, meaning another, not being able to say the thing they want to say. Like, she does that better than any bitch I can think of.
And I
And
think that's something that I really appreciate about her work, is to me that is true realism. Because
yeah.
we never say what we really think when it matters most. It's re that's a really difficult thing to do. And it takes, I think, a lot of practice and maturity to be able to do that elegantly or naturally. And I think, like, I know that's something that a lot of people found frustrating about normal people and conversations with friends, is people's, the characters' kind of lack of communication skills. But that's real life,
That's
baby.
human.
Yeah, like, to me, that isn't just a literary device to like facilitate the plot. That is how people behave. That is how they communicate.
Yeah, she has captured something I feel really true about, like, family relationships, romantic relationships. Like, it's, I think it, this is, you know, she is so back for me. Like, I'm now back on the Sally Rooney train. And would read a future book with greater interest than I, you know, I left Intermezzo sitting there for 2 years.
Yeah,
And
my copy is still on my shelf, uncracked.
well, I would say maybe not right now, but when you are like in a more joyful, like mentally engaged time in your life, I would crack it and just see how you feel. Because I certainly am enjoying it way more than I thought I would.
I think as well, though, like, I got really sick of the Sally Rooney discourse train. People get weird about her. People get fucking weird about her. They get weird about the campaigns. There's like always when the three since Conversations with Friends, like, we've seen three new novels from her, and every time there's this really weird, ugly negativity, this jealousy of who gets approved, who doesn't. Like, it's obviously great for the book because it's all engagement, but I think it just really turns me off, man. Like, it and then you there ends up being this like really kind of weird, horrible, gossipy, like, kind of, I think almost like people hoping it's shit and hoping that it's a failure. And I think I just got kind of burnt out. My interest died, you know?
Yeah.
But again, I should not be so swayed by such bullshit.
But also, I think you were more swayed by the fact that you didn't enjoy the previous book,
Yeah.
which I don't, I feel like that's at least something real. Like, I didn't enjoy the previous book, so I didn't approach this with great enthusiasm or curiosity. But this book is really diff. I really believe that this book is way closer to the first two books than it is to the third book in terms of theme, execution, plot vibes. And I think you would end up really liking it.
Okay, as I said, that it's on my shelves. It's in my library. It's ready for me when I'm ready for it.
I'm glad. Well, I ain't got nothing else to say, have you?
I have nothing more to say to you.
Well, I hope I see you again soon. It's August. That means it's my birthday month.
It's your birthday month, and we're gonna have some fun times together.
I hope so.
We're gonna
We
have a giggle.
deserve it.
All right, then, bestie, let's call time on this one.
I'll see you on the flip side, my friends. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.